Bruce, I think that entrepreneurs and owners have this servant leadership mentality, like we eat last, everyone else comes first. We think about ourselves last and we start to hate who we become because we just put everything first.
Hey, Pronosos, welcome back to the show. This episode is about you and we're going to explain why. We're going to really dive into that. I think it's big. I think it talks about what we want to focus on for 2025 and how we want to improve as a business owner and defining that and making sure that that's measurable. So I'm excited. We're diving deep into that. We're diving deep into Farrah going to Honduras with the boys, little GraphX trip. Very, very cool and eye-opening. And last but not least, you guys did some really cool quarterly planning and how it went. So before we start though, you guys know we have incredible partners that help put the show on every single week, and we got to thank them. Make sure you check them out as well. Multicraft underscore daddy. Guys, you know the drill. Look, open Instagram on your phone. Pull it up. Click the message button and then send Dave. He's got amazing videos. Every time we pull this up, like, this is the best. I love the flannel one. Send him a DM with your email address. He's sending out gifts every single week, including a bunch of PMI tape, which PMI is doing some incredible innovations as well. So that's always really cool to see in the space. Mention the Printable Pod that gets you 10% off your first order with Multicraft. They've been supplying the industry for over 50 years with top brands at competitive pricing.
Bruce, I want to tell you about the best new software platform to hit the industry. It's called DGI Apparel, and it was built by a group of MIT engineers with a background in screen printing. DGI allows you to connect your accounts with Sanmar, Alpha Broder, and SNS, and more to compare prices, inventory, and shipping times across every apparel supplier on one website. That's right. You can go on there, connect all your accounts, and you can even buy like AS color on there, which is pretty cool. The average shop spends 2 hours purchasing every day, and DGI is going to cut that time in half. So ask yourself, what would you do with an extra hour every day? And we don't have a promo code for DGI because DGI is always free for shops to use. That's right. It costs you $0. And if you're not already using it, you're wasting your own time and money. There's over 1,500 other shops already using DGI apparel. So check them out. And this morning, they actually showed us a new feature that will automatically order from your Printavo invoices. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that or not, but it's like autopilot and it blew my mind. So DGI Apparel, check them out. All right, who we got next, Bruce?
GraphX Source. Steven was just spending a week down in Honduras at one of the GraphX Source offices and was totally blown away. GraphX Source offers industry leading options for your shop. Canvas Inc. is what, six or something? Artists handling a lot of production art. Oh, wow. Okay. Seps, mockups. I know you guys are doing online store building there too. They do digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, but they've been around for 40 plus years. I didn't know that, but that's incredible. Mention Printavo Pod 24. That gets you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitize order. Thanks, GraphX.
All right, Bruce, I know you don't have a DTF machine. I do. And one of the struggles of DTF printing is dryers. But this great company called BMAC, that's BMAC Industries, and DTF Superstore are leading and innovating a solution in the DTF printing industry by building a state-of-the-art dryer. It's the top-of-the-line equipment that's manufactured here in the States, and it enhances productivity and quality. I've got one of them in my shop and they're built like tanks. They have a commitment to excellence. BMAC Industries continues to push the boundaries of what's possible in garment decoration. And they're hosting DTF Expo in Arizona in April. So BMAC, DTF Superstore, DTFExpo.com. Go check them out. Great people over there. And we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast. Thanks so much.
Last but not least, Easy Way. If you're spending hours cleaning screens, that is a thing of the past with Easy Way screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals. Their innovative formulas are designed to work quickly and effectively, so you could spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Spent a bunch of time hanging out with the Easy Way team at Long Beach, and it was awesome. Always a good time with them. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. Their website, easyway.com, an insane amount of resources. So especially if you're just getting, you know, your shop up running, you have different problems on Reclaim, they've got a lot there to be able to help. So check out their expert advice as they can help you succeed in printing. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, guess the hoodie.
You're rocking either an AS Color heavyweight hoodie.
Whoa, I think you just nailed it on the first question guess.
It's the heavyweight, right?
Yeah, and matching shorts.
Oh, he's got a full fit. Ooh, hey. What are those, 5-inch?
It's all about the matching fits, I guess. I think. Whoa, I don't know if I could go sub-5 yet. We're not ready. Thank you for taking on the pod. You did it. I haven't heard it yet, but I'm excited to listen with Sarah. Was there any, you called me after at some point, or maybe the day after, and you were like, that was really, really cool. What was something that stuck out afterwards that you feel like was a heavy hitter? This is Sarah Silverman. If you didn't listen to the episode, she's like a business consultant.
Yeah, business basically, because you weren't there, it was awesome. No, I'm just kidding. She comes at it. So like she's a psychologist and like has her PhD in more like behavioral sciences and like how people react to stuff. And a lot of what she tries to get in is like, before you learn to delegate, it's really about trust and building two-way trust between, you know, your team has to trust you and you have to trust your team. But also we chatted about like the new generation of employees and what they're expecting, what they're looking for, and what they're looking for in terms of a good work environment. And so even like little things like just making sure they feel, you know, welcome and fulfilled and heard and listened to, like it's not always about necessarily the dollar, more than are they coming to a place where they feel challenged, respected, you know, they can go home at night and say, I enjoy where I work and the people that lead me care about me. And so a lot of what she teaches is like, you know, team dynamic and delegation exercises and, you know, but really getting down to the root of it was trust. And I thought that was really, really cool.
I like that. That's awesome. Sarah Silverman, you could check her stuff out at outsideangle.com. All right. I got a couple things to chat with you on. We've got Long Beach next week. We'll see you.
Pre-impressions. This is pre-impressions, but we'll probably post impressions.
Correct. I've got a cool guest you don't know about yet, but hopefully setting it up that we'll have there. He's a pretty heavy hitter. And yeah, excited to walk around, see what's going on at the show. See, we'll do like a recap after. So if people aren't there, they can still get a little taste of it. I was thinking that a lot of years, especially as we record at the beginning of the year, there are certain topics that we tend to hammer on. And some of those topics in the past have been cash flow. I remember we did a lot of focus around cash flow, everything from, you know, talking about financing, talking about building, buying, renting, collecting payments was such a big push. Like there were so many people not collecting even 100% upfront was the emphasis. And, you know, cash flow being hard enough running a business, it doesn't get easier over time. Like it doesn't solve itself. Other years, we've talked about a lot of hiring and process. You know, we've really tried to focus on delegating. I mean, you had a really good episode recently on using VAs more effectively and really practical examples in that. But I think this year, wait, hold on. I think this year, that one was louder than I thought, huh? I think this year is about you as the business owner. We talked about Fabric.Inc a little bit. We're speaking to people who, there's a lot of people actually who are interested, which has been really, really cool. And they want to be held accountable to growing themselves. And so it made me realize that owners, we really pour everything, more than everything, 110% into the business and the team constantly. It's, you know, helping them to eat first. It's doing everything to keep the lights on. It's getting the jobs out the door, picking up all the slack around. But I'm not sure that there's much of a time where the tables turn. Like, we're not good at converting that energy to being proactive about our time instead of being dragged along a path. There was a really good, there's this marathoner, you know him, Jesse Itzler. He has a really cool calendar called the Big Ass Calendar, which you could Google it. It's a very cool way to plan out the year. But ignoring that thing, his point was we tend to get pulled through time. Like, if you look at the year, we tend to get events booked on our calendar. We tend to get, do trips or things last minute in a way where we're so tired that we should do something. Let's go do something different. Instead, we should be proactive about our time and how we're spending our time. And I think it's about investing in ourselves. It's about holding each other, whether friends or in Fabric or different groups. There's a lot of different text groups in the industry accountable for improvements that you want to make. So, hey, look, by the end of this year, this is what I want to look like measurable characteristics of what I want to be, what I want to look like as an owner, as, you know, maybe it's as a wife, as a husband, whoever. And that way, at the end of the year, we can really look back and say, yeah, I really made a difference for myself. I mean, I see the things. I was scrolling on Instagram this morning and I see Lee Stewart's like made this crazy, really cool change about, you know, he wants to get super fit, you know, very mentally clear, delegate stuff off so he's not there all the time. And he's making these active changes and he's sharing the progress and it's measurable. And so I want to keep talking about this throughout this year. I thought it was a great time since it's January of 2025. To announce, to declare that this is the year of you as a business owner. As Mike Michalowicz from Profit First would say, you as the number one most important employee in the company.
Bruce, I think that entrepreneurs and owners have this servant leadership mentality, like we eat last, everyone else comes first. We think about ourselves last and we start to hate who we become because we just put everything first. Almost in a way where we have this like superhero imposter complex, right? Like, I have to be moving the fastest. I have to be setting the bar here. If I'm not there, they won't get it right. You know, I don't even have time to sit down and eat lunch. I'm in the shop 60 or 70 hours a week. I don't have time to go to the gym. You know, that takes a backseat approach, right? Do you know that scene from The Matrix? Do you know the famous scene where like Neo's dodging bullets versus controlling the Matrix?
I've seen the clips. I've never seen the movie though.
It's funny. I went to like a business. I was in this internship in college where we painted houses and the owner of the company posted this video and we started spending time with it. And we said like, you can wait for stuff to get continually shot at you and you can try and dodge them. And eventually you're going to get buzzed by them. Or you can be in control of the Matrix, right? And start to control what's in front of you instead of them like pulling you through or just getting shot at. And it's a scene that resonates in my head when I think of like controlling my life, my business, my happiness, you know, those things. I'm like, am I in control of my life or is my life just like controlling me and pushing me in all these directions? And I think business owners think about themselves last. They truly do. And I agree. This is the year where it's about you. That's super cool. What made you have this revelation?
Well, you know, going through a lot of the Fabric.inc applications and talking to people and seeing what people just want to make changes on, I've been fortunate enough to be able to step out of the day-to-day more so to think about and reflect on a lot more. And still being able to get lunch with other shop owners and ask how they're doing. It's what you said in that I don't want to be so many people. I would say the majority of people that I have this conversation with, if they look at what they're doing day to day, that is not what they are wanting to do in the future. But then if you ask the second question, do you need to be doing those things? Like, if you really think about it, they will pause and, you know, if they've got even some sort of small team together, they will say, yeah, probably not. but, and then here comes the excuses and like, you know, but, the but, reasons but, and but, so but, on, but, so but. So, so it's like, nobody wants to be in that position. That's not the goal. That's not the, that's not peak business ownership. And so the only way I think to get there though is being so proactive, even to when you sit at your desk, you're saying, what am I going to do right now? And is that the person that I want to be doing the same thing at the end of the year? Because it's so hard to use that J word, just, and just keep poking in and being able to do those things.
I heard this on a, I heard this on something recently. It says the decisions you make at 8 a.m. are way different than the decisions you make at 3 p.m. or 2 p.m.
Damn.
And I've really been taking that to heart. Here's a funny thing. Bruce is into his, you know, his health and wellness and really takes it seriously. It's something we admire. And we have a text thread with a different phone number that I text when I work out. It's like this alias. I call it Bryce, actually. Yeah, so Bryce is in my
Casey,
his name's Casey. I gave him a name. But I have Bruce as my favorites, and then I have Bryce. And that's my accountability. Even though you're my friend, I have this alias on the top of my phone. And whenever I go to the gym or work out or whatever that is, I send a screenshot to it. And we keep it in check. And that was a thing of like, okay, I need to hold myself accountable to something. I want to be doing this in the morning. And so I'm going to create vehicles and games for myself to operate in. I also have this thing of, what am I going to do before 9 a.m.? Right? Like, I believe my mornings are the most productive, where I have the most like clear thought and I can really do deep work. And so it's like, okay, before 9 a.m., these are all the things I want to get done for the day. And if I get those things done by 9 a.m., sometimes I'm like, okay, I don't care what happens for the rest of the day. I can be in meetings, I can hop on calls, I can help people out, I can poke around on Slack, whatever. But putting those systems in place, they've really, really helped me out. And I think the key there is, you're not alone, and it's really hard to do it alone. There's very few people I know that can just strong arm that type of discipline. And so I do believe, while caring about yourself is super important, finding someone or something to hold you accountable to that is cool. And Bruce, I've been in all these Fabric. We've got a ton of applications coming in, which is amazing. We've heard some amazing stories. We're getting through them as fast as we can. But I just keep hearing this, you know, I know what I need to do. I know where I need to go. I think I even know how to do it. I just need the guardrails to keep me on track. So super, super insightful.
And by the way, if anyone else wants to text this number to Casey, it's 657-229-1649. And send your, you know, number one thing you want to accomplish this month, and Casey's going to help you be able to do it. So we'll see how that goes. All right.
You're gonna get blown up.
I think it'll be cool. Okay. We didn't get to talk about this yet, but you've been back from Honduras at the GraphX H, or one of their HQs. I think there's multiple. They've got multiple different countries. This is a big company. I didn't realize how large GraphX is. And not just because to sponsor the podcast and partner, but like really cool the videos that you were sharing going on there. So I mean, share with us, like, what was that trip like?
So we've been working with Graphic Source since probably the beginning of COVID. At the time, they maybe only had 20 or 30 employees in Honduras. And they were kind of pivoting the business a little bit to full-time art staffing, right? They do a lot of a la carte stuff. They've got a team in Thailand doing digitizing. And so they made a position and a focus to really work on full-time staffing. And so, you know, we were one of the early Printavo shops that decided to take that plunge and work through it with them. There's definitely early on with Graphic Source, like there were definitely growing pains because we're trying to figure stuff out our way. They've got different things their way. And I walk into Honduras. We, you know, get picked up at the airport and they're like, they're pumping me up. They're like, wait till you see this. Just wait till you see this. Just wait till you see this. I'm like, okay, okay, okay. We get to one of the most beautiful buildings in Honduras, first of all. It's a, you know, pretty poor country, but a beautiful, beautiful building, probably seven-story building. And we get up to the sixth floor. And I don't know how big I'm going to guess it was 10,000 square feet, maybe 7,000 square feet of just desks and people just buzzing away, just grinding on stuff. And it was really well lit, beautifully decorated, good energy in the room, people at each other's desks. And I just kind of stood there and took it in, and I was like, whoa, wait, this is Graphic Source? The first thing we did is we sat down in the boardroom. I think it was Eduardo. He's like, I want to give you guys a presentation on how we've built this infrastructure. And he went through like this pyramid of leadership and how they train Maxwell's theories of like leadership, the book, like I think John Maxwell or whatever, and how they start artists at a certain point and they graduate to different levels. And there's juniors and seniors and account managers and people that just write SOPs. And then we learn they have the academy, and the academy is where people can actually pay to get trained, Adobe certified. And if they pass an entrance exam, they have a job at Graphic Source or a job at any other company in the world. And I just like took it and I was like, you four, Nick, Lucas, Brent, Rob, you built this? Like, we give them so much shit because they're hilarious. And they looked at it and they're like, they built this. Like, we put in the tools. They, like, the leaders that they've put in place there are incredible. And it was just this like, holy shit. I had this holy shit moment because it wasn't Nick or Brent or Lucas or Rob teaching me what they do. It was their leaders who, English is a second language, but their English is freaking awesome. And they're teaching like what type of coaching and training. Like, they've built a company rooted in education, fostering people, teaching processes, continuous improvements. And it was really just a beautiful symphony to watch, I think, was the way I would describe it.
That's incredible. For those who don't know, Rob, who's one of the guys behind the scenes that is like a master, you know, separations extraordinaire, and is training a lot of these artists, also can name any color the Pantone. He can name the Pantone of any color that you show him.
Yeah, it's very, called Game of Pantones. We actually took a video of it. So me and Andy were there, Andy from Shirt Kong, and we did a whole day of content. We have tons of videos and pictures and stuff.
Oh, when's it coming out?
It's on my hard drive.
TBD.
they even, at the top floor, like, they have an embroidery room. And, you know, we get calls from digitizers all the freaking time, right? We went into this embroidery room and they had like four embroidery machines and they had different brands, Baradins, Tajimas, whatever. And then they had a wall of every color of thread, Madeira, the different thread colors. And one of the things they did, and you could see the fire in their eyes and the passion where they're like, when we digitize, we sew out everything. And we actually give them a digitized, like a picture of the sew out, because we want to optimize the sew so that the shop doesn't even have to do a sew out. And so I thought to myself, how often does our embroiderer always does a sew out? Like, they always do one sew out first, right? And it's like, wait, if they didn't have to do one sew out before every job, that would save 7 to 10 minutes on every single job they do. Just by having this company do it. And then they can do reductions. They can, you know, decide where to do do thread breaks and things like that. And just the level of excellence, like, they're thinking three steps ahead. Bruce, they even have a team of...
They do the sew outs. So are they, is it just a room of like one head or like what?
Yeah, just a bunch of single heads. Yeah. So a lot of digitizing, some digitizing gets done in Honduras. A lot of it gets done in Thailand. And so they have 24-hour turnaround. And so they have 600 artists in Honduras and then like maybe 300 to 400 in Thailand. So like if I put in a request for digitizing today, it gets digitized tonight in Thailand. And then they might sew it out in Thailand. They might sew it out in Honduras, but they'll sew it out right away. They'll snap a picture of it
overnight as well.
Overnight. Cause they're working on different hours. Right. So like my team at Graphic Source, like Andrea and, you know, she'll put in the request for the overnight team to digitize in Thailand. They'll digitize, they'll get it back. They'll send a picture of it back in the morning to give to our team. We'll review, we can do whatever, we can go back and forth. And so they literally like have a 24-hour cycle to be able to get feedback in real time. And I didn't quite fathom that. And I was like, oh, that's different. right? In the way that they do it. So yeah, they'll actually do the sew-outs. They have a team of engineers, Bruce. And so GraphicSource does a lot of staffing for companies they can't really talk about, like kind of under NDA, and we can guess maybe what they are. But they have like a whole fleet of artists that are just working for one company. Now, there's some they can talk about, like Nike and Callaway and things like that. But for confidentiality reasons, they just can't. And so they have a team of engineers that are just optimizing the process for the staffing for the employees. So if there's a repetitive task that's happening over and over and over again, the engineering team will study it and try to build tools for that business to speed it up.
Even just like scripts and
just scripts
or Photoshop, just.
And yeah, but even like web app stuff. So I'll give you an example. When we build a school, we have to do Arch name drops. We have to do name drops for athletes at scale. So if we have one school, 300 athletes, 10 products, you know, be 4,000 mockups, right? And we have to prepare the DTF files for it. And we want a graphic that's ready for social media. So like we want, you know, 4 or 5 different things. And so we spent a lot of time with them, did it manually. They studied it, built a bunch of tooling for us. And then now their artists can use some of the scripts that our teams have developed together, or like, you know, things that can get DTF files ready with halftones and things like that. And it was just like, you know, today on the NIL store, we have 18,000. So there's 180,000 designs, and they're able to do like thousands per day. Based on some of the tooling and automation that they designed for us, right? So pretty neat in the way they operate.
Is there some sort of training? Does everyone get shipped to a boot camp, or is that locally in every country, or how does that work?
So on the 7th floor is where they have the academy, where all the training happens, and artists can level up and get certified in different things. So you can start as an entry-level artist, right, that might just be doing mock-ups or something simple. And then you can get certified in separations. You can get certified in high-end separations. You can get certified in high-end creative. Maybe you want to get trained in management and actually SOP writing. And so one of the things they do is they have a QA team. Before a shop goes live, the artist will work with the QA team to monitor their work and see how they're progressing with the shop. And they will write out an SOP for your shop that is like 20 pages long. Actually, I'll send you this one. It's a 31-page SOP for how to use, how to create proofs for Campus Ink in the way that we want it, with our ink colors, with our style and everything like that. And so, you know, what I, you know, when I get a lot of feedback from shops and they're like, well, maybe it didn't work out this way, or it's hard to, it's like, you kind of have to trust their process and let them teach you, but also have a good system for feedback and communication and stuff like that. The other thing that they have is a company called Callforia. That's a call center. So they can actually pick up phone calls and do customer service. And so part of their team is doing artists. Part of their team is doing back office stuff. So we have a team of 4 there that are just living in Shopify, building SKUs and catalogs, nothing really art related.
Wow.
And they're managing that. So
did you see some of your team there? Or are they?
Oh yeah. We took pictures together. We hung out.
Wow. That's pretty special.
And what's really cool is other shops, you can send swag to them. And so like we took a group picture of all of us wearing our Campus Ink stuff together, and I sat with them and spent time. And you know what I realized is like the only difference between me and them is a language barrier and several thousand miles. They're extremely talented. They're empathetic. They're humans. They're not robots, right? There is no difference between me and them. And so the more time I just spend learning their culture, developing them, you know, meeting them where they are, like that's how my business can really accelerate. And so we have a pretty good, yeah. What were you going
to
say?
It's easy to think about assistants, or specifically virtual assistants, as, you know, oh, it's a contractor, so I'm just going to give you this task and you should be able to do it right away. But you're right. If you change the mentality to no, this is a part of the team, That just doesn't work out of this office. Now, how do I treat it? And going back to what you said about, some people have time ramping up or some people have different issues. Okay, well, if you had that same issue and they were sitting next to you, what would be the next step? Yeah, it's a cool mindset shift.
Yeah. And the cool part is now that we can stack artists, I can be like, hey, Nick, add one more artist, and everything's already built in and now they're in our operating system. Or subtract, right? What's interesting is the more tooling they build for us, I would tell Brent, I was like, so this is going to eliminate the need for maybe an artist. He's like, yeah, maybe, but we'll find other things. Like, they are really focused on technology and tooling and automating. And that's how they're going to, you know, that's why I believe they've grown to the scale that they're at. The other cool thing, Bruce, is every fourth or fifth computer had Printavo open.
That is really cool.
And so one of the things they've done is they've mastered Printavo and statuses and tasks. And so, like, if you're starting to get working with them, they can show you how to set up your Printavo in a way that flows really well for art, which I thought was really cool. One thing that they're doing is, so they've opened in, they're in Honduras, they're in Thailand, they're breaking ground, or actually they just launched in El Salvador. El Salvador is a really up and coming great country with great, you know, great resources. And so, you know, they are setting up shop there to just continue to expand. So pretty cool stuff. And we had a little bit of fun.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I saw Andy from Sure Kong there, of which on our road trip back, we also had dinner, and, that is super cool. Okay. Last thing I wanted to talk to you about is EOS. We didn't necessarily have these in the notes before, but you said, because yesterday you had annual planning, I think some sort of planning that it was all day. And I thought that would be really cool to dive into. I had some stuff that I wanted to share as well on EOS and traction. I should step back though. If you haven't heard of EOS, it's called Entrepreneur Operating System. It's really comes out of this book called Traction. Buy it right now on Amazon. It may be the best book for you as a business, whether you're very large, very small, you know, I don't know, in the middle. It really helps create a North Star for the business and point everyone in the same direction. Some of the things that they talk about in EOS, for example, are what are the few metrics that each department or each person is responsible for, right? Because if they don't have those, then they're not measurable and you can't tell if they're doing a good job or not. What does the team look like that you want to grow into? And what is the team right now? And looking at the team right now, do you have two things correct? Do you have the right people in the right seats? Those are two different characteristics. You may have the right person and you may have the right role, but is this the right person for the right role? Do they have the capacity to be able to do this job? Or do you need to switch the seats or you need to switch the people? That's another component that they talk about. But there's a lot of these different areas that they help break down harder, bigger problems to really focus on the difficult things that are holding your business back. And I really am a big advocate of the book. We tried to get Gino Wickman, the author, but to speak of pronouncers, he is like, I think 70 or 50,000, so some insane amount. Whereas when I read it, I checked out and said, okay, it's not going to work. But anyway.
Okay. So we have been running Traction now for 2.5 years. First, what I did is I had the entire team read the book. And then we had someone come in and lead one session, one like super long session to teach us all about it.
Wait, who is involved in that to read the book? Is this
my
managers and above? Or
my leadership team. And so part of Traction is you have a weekly L10 meeting. And in that L10 meeting, you bring in your leaders. And you never skip that meeting. It is like the holy grail of meetings. And so whoever is going to be in that meeting, I had them all read the book. At the time, it was 7 or 8 of us. That leadership team is now 12 people, I believe. Had everyone read the book and like really had them read the book. And then we did, like we had an implementer come in, teach us everything. And an implementer for Traction is expensive. I've seen some prices. I mean, well over like $10,000. Worth every single penny though, because they set the chassis and the framework for how you actually run traction. One key part of traction is making sure that the integrator, so in a company you have a visionary and you have an integrator, the integrator is the one that's actually running traction. So at Campus Inc., that is not me. That is our CFO, Steve Watson. And he keeps everything aligned. What you do is you spend time in a couple different categories. So you spend time building your vision and your values. You spend time figuring out your business niche, your specific uniques. But really what you do is you start to create pictures. What do you want your company to look like in 10 years? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What's the revenue? What's the profit? And then you say, okay, what do we want it to look like in 3 years? And you start to write it down and you fill out all this stuff. Then you say, what do we want it to look like in 1 year? And what you really do is you just document that, right? And we spent a lot of time doing that. That took quite a bit of time and we really like struggled with it. But once we had that all down, we had like our chassis built. And then what you do is you say, okay, 1 year from now, we're going to break that down into four quarters and we're going to work on each quarter and we're going to figure out what the biggest issues are in the company. And we're going to assign 4 to 5 key projects. We call those rocks. And those rocks are what we focus on for the next 90-ish days. And so from those rocks, you create 10 metrics that you're going to track religiously. And that's what makes your L10 scorecard. Over time, every time you do this meeting, you keep building on that scorecard. And every week, there are specific team leaders that are responsible for their metrics. So we started, our scorecard probably started with like maybe 15 or 20. Today, our scorecard has 100 different metrics that are tracked weekly, religiously, and everyone owns their metric. So if we decide during our quarterly traction meeting that we want to add something to the leadership scorecard, we'll create a slot for it. And so over time, this compounds and it builds and you go back and you revisit it every quarter. So it's like clockwork.
That's daunting. I mean, 100.
But it takes us literally when we go through those metrics every Wednesday, it's a 15-minute review and every lead just goes through their metrics. You got like a minute or so to just quickly run through and they have to be done before the meeting so that we just rip through them. Would it help, Bruce, if I told you some of the things we'll measure? That'd be cool. Okay. So we obviously go through revenue. So, you know, different buckets of different revenue. And we report that every single week. So all the different segments and how we're selling to. Then what we start to report is, you know, how much, what's our accounts receivable that week, right? Like, what do people owe us? We track that every week. We'll track
our... Are you tracking this to... Maybe this is a monthly thing. I don't know if it's a weekly thing, but are you tracking that to a goal number or is it, this is just what it is?
For starters, it's this what it is because we're just trying to get a basis, right? We're just trying to get a basis. As time progressed, we started tracking things like how many orders are shipped out every day. And then it got more complicated. How many orders are shipping out in 5 days, 7 days, 10 days, right? And so Chad now has his own metrics that he'll tell us how many orders are aging. He then added something on return requests. How many return requests are we getting per day? What's the return value, refunds, exchange rate, resolution time? So he takes pride in those two segments, right? We also will track how much we spent at SNS, Sanmar, and Alpha Broder. So we can track in real time a percentage of revenue is our cost of goods sold. On the NIL side, we'll track how many athletes got signed on our platform last week and how fast did we get them up, right? And so then the team on the NIL side is saying like, what's our, what we call SLA? How quickly can we onboard a new athlete? The sales team might say, how many new schools have we signed? The marketing team is looking at revenue from email. And so they're saying, we sent out 100 emails last week and, you know, $60,000 came from email revenue and this was our open rate, right? And so like every leader obsesses over their numbers And what's really cool now is we did that for, you know, a year or two, and now every leader runs traction with their teams. So they go through their metrics and then they report them up to the entire group. So it is beautiful when it runs over time, and it has been a game changer for us.
That's amazing. I want to add some more info into some of these so that people can implement the two in their own. And then the next is I want to ask you like how yours went and maybe how you structured it or things that you learned so to have a really good annual meeting. But you said L10 meeting. So the reason why it's called L10 is at the end of the meeting, everyone's supposed to rate it and say, 1 to 10, how productive was this? Like, how helpful was this meeting? Which I really like that question, not just for this, but for all meetings. Because, you know, if you're sitting there and you're involved in something and you shouldn't be, and you rated a 2, like you don't need to be there. Or, you know, to be honest, how could this have been a better meeting? How could this have been more helpful? And so people are supposed to rate it and you're supposed to get to 10. The meeting itself covers, you know, and everyone can take their own interpretation. This is the foundation that you take and then you start to customize for your business. But it covers, yeah, that scorecard review, which is the different metrics you're trying to track, which I feel like a good best practice is to start with like maybe 3 numbers that you start to get going on. Because truthfully, it takes a good 2-3 months of this repetition for people to really start thinking about and caring about these numbers. Then next, it's any sort of updates. Then it's what is a very important part, which is identifying issues that are problems going on in the business that will prevent you from hitting the goal numbers, you know, at the end of the quarter or at the end of the year. You take those issues and you turn them into tasks. And what are the tasks for the next meeting or the next month to be able to review? And did we get them done? And then the last thing is rating the meeting. So those 5 things are the foundation of the L10 meeting. All right. So for your guys' though, how did it go? Like, did you think it's a great use of time? Did you like, what are maybe some tips to have a really effective quarterly planning meeting?
Yeah. So we fly everyone in, or we try to, we don't do it at our office. We went to the country club down the street and we rented out like the conference room, and we take it very seriously. So we like set the stage of the day. We set our intentions for the day. The first thing we do at the day is we talk about personal bests, business, we call them segues, personal best, business best, and what are your expectations from today? And what we really try to do is spend time hearing, like, how do we meet each other's expectations? I really want clarity on where we're going in this direction. That's an expectation I have. And we take furious notes and we're writing things down so that everyone feels heard and understood. And so that kind of first segue probably takes an hour, but it's just like, it's very important to spend time in reflection, both personally and professionally. Then we went through a like state of the union. So like financial updates. How did we do last year? How did we track? And our CFO, Steve, runs that. And he really spends time teaching rather than just telling. So he'll go through like, hey, this is cost of goods sold. Does everyone remember what's in cost of goods sold? And if someone says, is contract printing in cost of goods sold? You know, he'll remind them like, oh, it's actually right here on the P&L. So he's really spending time teaching them to understand it so that they can go, aha, aha, aha. Then what we do is we review the last quarter. And so we go back, I shared it with you, Bruce. We go back to what rocks we set up last quarter and did we accomplish them? So like we really spend time like, did we do that? Yes or no? Or does that need to move forward? Then we spent time identifying issues. So everyone had to make a list of all the issues in the business. And what we start to do is we spend 5 minutes on each issue and we set a timer. And on that timer, we're discussing like, is this issue, does it warrant a project? Is it urgent enough to do today? Or are we going to punt on this issue, right? And do it next quarter. And from those issues, we build 4 to 5 rocks And that's the last part of the meeting where we're saying, these are our five most important things we are going to do this quarter. We assign rock owners, so who owns the rock, and we spend time writing out what does success look like? What does success look like? And when we leave that meeting, we all as a group feel really good about the path forward. But what it also lets us do is not get distracted. And so when something new comes up, if it's an issue, we'll identify, that's not part of our rock this quarter, punt, that's going next quarter. Or, you know, like, and it just gives us like these guidelines to just kind of go back to this. And that's probably the most important part of it. I always get text messages after Traction being like, that was sweet. I'm jacked up for this quarter. That was a good meeting. And so it has to be run really well, but it also just builds morale and culture for your leaders. So I don't know. That's how we do it.
You said the offsite thing. I wanted to also emphasize that. They specifically mentioned in the book to do this at a different location because it allows you to really get in the zone and focus there versus being in the same, you know, space that you're always in. I think most people are probably, you know, 3, maybe 10 people that listen. So, you know, you may not have the management team, but taking just the people who care a little bit more, maybe someone who's in the front office that's just doing everything, that person's great. Maybe someone who's managing production, that person's great. To be able to go in and work on these goals. And
you can run Traction alone. You don't need a huge company or a huge team. In fact, like something, you know, Kevin has a Baumgart has his Airbnb business and he runs it with his 3 Airbnb partners. When we're launching Fabric, Kevin's like, okay, we're going to run Traction and we're going to run it the same way as every other company. So like, you don't need to be big. You don't need to have senior level executives doing it. It's a very simple system and a very simple agenda. I actually have a Traction 101 guide that I made. It's like a cheat sheet. It's 9 pages long.
We'll link it. Should we link it in the show?
Oh, no, you got to shoot me an email. I'll send it to you.
All right. Steven at Campus.
Campus.inc. Yep. I'll send it to you. It's a Cliff Notes version. But yeah, I mean, it's this kind of stuff that I look back on and say, what were some of the best decisions I made? Number one, doing something like this. Number two, finding someone to actually do it because I was not capable of doing it. So yeah.
All right. Love it. Thanks guys for listening to this week's episode. Print Hustlers, see you at Long. Well, this will probably go live after Long Beach. So hopefully you enjoyed Long Beach. Have a good one. Bye. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications. If you enjoyed this video, if you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.